Hey, everybody. You know, Mark and I have over 20 years of experience as therapists and as addicts in long-term successful recovery. We know better than anyone what works and what doesn't to break out of porn and sex addiction, heal betrayal trauma, and reclaim your relationship.
And we've poured all of our personal and professional recovery and healing experience into a first-of-its-kind program for addicts, spouses, and couples. We call it Dare to Connect.
At least four times every week, we engage with you in real time, in the trenches, giving you the knowledge and the tools to take back your life and relationship.
Whatever else you've done on your journey for healing and recovery, you've never done anything like this.
You know, Mark and I, we've made all the mistakes, so you don't have to. Don't reinvent the wheel.
We all know tomorrow never comes. Look, don't wait one more day to change. Claim your free two-week trial today at daretoconnectnow.com.
Hey, everybody. I'm Steve Moore.
And I'm Mark Castleman.
We know the pain and heartbreak of porn and sex addiction.
And we know the triumph of breaking completely free.
Every day, we help our clients find hope and healing.
Join us in the fight to take back your life, your marriage, and be stronger than ever.
This is the PBSC Squared Podcast. So Mark, I've told you before, you know, after my dad passed away when I was a kid, I ended up for a while living in my grandparents' house on my mom's side. It was kind of a big to do, and there was a lot of, it was all obviously a sudden thing, and my mom had a lot to take care of. So we spent several months living down there about 20 miles from where I live now. And I remember I was one day, I can't remember the context because this was like 25 years ago, but I was sitting at my grandma's house one day. She'd made me lunch and it was like a sandwich and it was something that I didn't really like. And like, I loved my grandma more than anything. I still do. Loved her more than anything. Like, looked up to her so much. She was like the sweetest lady you'd ever meet, you know, totally patient, never get upset about anything. And she said, make sure you eat all your sandwich. Cause she comes from that generation that like, you don't throw food away,
right?
That's not a thing.
Away.
That is not a thing. And anyway, so she walked down the hall and left, and I remember I thought I heard her go a ways down the hall, and I took like the second half of the sandwich and I threw it away, but I made a noise with the garbage can. And as I'm throwing it away, she comes back down the hall and she just stops and she stares at me. She gives me like the sternest look I've ever seen her ever give. And she just said, and she says, I am so disappointed in you, Steve.
Oh, jeez.
And then walk back down the hall.
Oh, jeez.
Like, and it was just the worst. I think about it now. So it just like cuts me like a knife. I remember that feeling of just total embarrassment and being caught in a lie, because I actually, now that I think about it, I think she asked first before she said that. Did you just throw that away? And I totally denied it.
Yep, denied it.
And then she just said she was disappointed and walked away. And you know, I as I think about our topic today, what we're talking about in this concept of, you know, what the fear that keeps us addicts trapped in acting out and in our addiction. To me, even though it's a sandwich, it's not acting out, right? The same line of thinking was at play. I was in such a place of, even when caught, not wanting to be labeled or actually seen fully for who I was or what I'd done.
Yes.
Right. Because, and that fear of disappointment was so great, especially with somebody that I respected, that even when I was caught red-handed, I still, in other areas, I would pride myself. I was a really honest kid for the most part. But when those kinds of situations would come up, there are far too many times where I would lie till my pants was on, my pants were on fire. Like it wouldn't matter. Like I just lie my, my butt off. Craziness.
No, that's a great story. You know, as we kind of go into this topic, I was thinking as we were warming up for this, I thought, okay, I have so many stories of lying and hiding and not being authentic. You could take up like a whole weekend training camp. But one of the ones is so classic to me, when my wife and I were dating, and I was the kid from LA, right? Mm-hmm. The beach kid. And my wife was from a much smaller town, you know, in the Mountain West. Mm. And so I had to impress her. She needs to be impressed so that, you know, I've got a shot here. Yeah. So I tell you, we would have conversations, like late night conversations, where I would extol her with all of these teenage macho kid from LA stories. Right.
Yeah.
My motorcycle, I was an expert motorcycle rider, my surfing adventures. And here's the thing. I didn't know the first thing about riding a motorcycle. Period. And I sucked at surfing. I was a beach kid, but I never could learn it properly. I'm kind of a big guy. But I sat there and extolled all these stories of these crazy, amazing, impressive adventures, and they were all false. And later, years later, when we got help, you know, I got more healthy and I was able to actually, you know, we talk about going back and coming clean on things like that. It's part of our healing. And I shared with her, I said, remember those conversations we used to have? So here's the first thing. She didn't remember the details. Which tells you that it mattered absolutely nothing to her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Here we come with that part. And when I told her, she just cracked up. She's like, really? You felt like you had to make that stuff up and lie in order for me to be impressed? That's just so crazy. Like she was just amazed. And so it was just like complete fantasy. But we do this stuff, right? And as we step back and look at it, so what was I afraid of? I was afraid that just as me, my raw, authentic, just plain old Mark with my flaws and what I might say my ordinariness.
Yeah.
Right. I wasn't some big macho studly dude with all this impressive background. It was just me. Yeah. And my fear was that just me was not going to be adequate to convince her that she should spend her life with me. So I had to make all this stuff up to be enough, to measure up. Because the thought of just coming at that relationship as just me was terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely. I started with the sandwich story for two reasons. One, because it's a nice icebreaker before getting too heavy. But the other reason why I think it's important is because, you know, as we talk about, you know, today's topic, which is the fear factor, really, that as a major player in what keeps us as addicts trapped, you know, in our cycles, our various cycles and the secrecy that accompanies them.
Yeah.
That story actually occurred, if memory serves, about a year before I actually got into addiction. A year ish. And before I ever was an addict, I was a fear-based, insecure person who operated under a couple of really baseline fear-based truths, right?
Yep.
I grew up in a highly religious society like you did and like many of our listeners do. And we talk often on this podcast about the benefits of religious structure and the doctrine that it can accompany it. But also the underbelly of it, the cultural nuances that in some cases are more harmful than good.
Yeah.
And I grew up in a really weird kind of dichotomy that probably many can relate to. I know you and I talked about this before the show, of where I'm taught, you know, coming from a heavily Christian background and do believe that there's a savior, right? There's an atonement. There's an opportunity to change, to repent, to be forgiven, to be absolved, right, on some level.
Yeah.
Of things that I do wrong. But then in the same breath, it was also kind of culturally said that making mistakes is like 100% not okay.
Right.
like making mistakes, making missteps isn't just not a good idea. The cultural norm was, well, it was my grandma's face looking at me,
yes,
who 99.9% of the time has always been loving and caring. But the minute I threw half a sandwich away, it was, you suck. Now, she didn't mean it that way, I'm sure. But it was incredible. But I guess that mistake making, right? For too many of us, I think we already have that dynamic. And if we don't, it gets reinforced in the addiction that making mistakes immediately should be associated with shame and a lack of competency as opposed to being a mistake.
And it's not just making mistakes, but there's a hierarchy of mistakes.
Yeah.
Right. There's some mistakes that are more acceptable than others.
Sure.
And if you make those really big mistakes now, right, the disappointed look on the face is going to be like immense.
Yes.
You know, and I started to see God with a disappointed face, mm-hmm. right, about what Mark just did. And that's where, you know, we really get into some deep places of shame. And you're right. Yeah. We talk about grace. We talk about, you know, the unconditional acceptance and love of God. And yet so often it doesn't translate over to what we're talking about today.
Right? Yes.
This fear that I'm not enough, I'm not measuring up, right? I can't let anyone know. I can't let anyone know about my dark side, about the stuff that I've done secretly, right? In the dark places, in the dark moments, behind the walls where no one can see. That has to stay secret.
Yes.
Right? And I can't be seen. I can't let you see me as who I am in my wholeness.
Yeah.
The good, the bad, the ugly, every part of it. There's no way that I can let you see that.
Yes.
It's unthinkable.
You're absolutely right. I mean, we as addicts far too often kind of fit the bill of an addiction version of a James Bond. You know, it's like we are regular upstanding citizens by day, all dressed up in our tux, and then we go, you know, metaphorically off countless people by night and never shall the twain lives meet.
Right.
You know, and right. we kind of operate in this place where we call it compartmentalize, right? And isolate these parts of us from ourselves that we not just dislike, but more so, again, the theme of today is we just fear so much. And if people knew even a taste of what it was, the thoughts and the notions and the feelings of what they would say, how they would act, what would the implications be? I mean, that story, looking back, it was one of many, right, that I learned over my childhood, just like you and many of our listeners, where, I mean, the logical thinking is you look at that story and the first thought as a 12-year-old is like, well, geez, if that's for throwing a sandwich away, can you imagine if grandma walked in on me acting out? Like,
you're right.
I mean, being serious, like, I can't even, she probably would have keeled over with a heart attack. Like,
yeah,
it would have just been, it would have been so over the top. And I truly, I mean, I can think of example after example, as I know you can, where there were situations where I got called out or confronted and I would have thrown myself off a bridge before coming clean and saying, yes, this is who I really am.
Yeah. No, the elaborate stories, the different ways of avoiding and embellishing and covering your tracks and just all the ways that we would do everything possible except get to the truth, except let someone see me in my, I like to call it my wholeness, mm-hmm. because the mistakes and the flaws and the weaknesses are part of our wholeness. They are. It's a pieces of the, of our puzzle. You know, and as I look back, if we're to get really super honest about this,
as we do,
you got to admit that in a lot of ways, as kids, we were taught not to be fully transparent and authentic and honest. We actually learned that it doesn't pay. In fact,
yes,
in many cases, you end up getting hurt. You end up experiencing a lot of pain because you were honest. I remember times when I tried it. Okay, I'm just going to be completely open and speak my truth, speak my mind.
Yeah.
Oh, man. When I had especially dysfunctional adults around me and I tried that, it was nasty. It's like, and then you come out and say, I will never do that again.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Well, it is. And I think what you're talking about, what comes to mind for me is that, you know, it's delineating that. I mean, of course, actions should have consequences, right? They always should. They always do. It's part of healthy accountability.
Sure.
But I think part of my culture of origin, family and otherwise, with that, again, they're all great people that were part of my life. This wasn't something that was nefarious, but there really was a message. The line became blurred between punishment and at least what I perceived or what I felt as being rejected as a whole.
Yes.
As being shunned.
Yes.
As that classic shame model, right? Rather than the attribute being focused on, it too often was addressed through the lens of, you're a bad kid and you need to become a good kid. As opposed to, hey, you're a good kid who made a mistake. And that's such a crucial delineator when we're talking about shame versus accountability, is being able to separate the mistake from the actual person. Because if my identity, right, if I make a mistake, that is something I can fix. If I am just broken, and a mess all on my own, and my mistakes are actually just byproducts of that brokenness, well, my situation is hopeless.
Yeah. How do you fix that? You know?
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, we learned that just being the whole real me isn't okay.
Yes.
It isn't okay to be that. And I'm going to have to tell you, from my experience as a kid, unfortunately, I learned that lying pays.
Yes.
Lying actually is a really great advantage for you, at least in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, some of it was avoiding punishment, because I knew if they found out I was, you know, I came from a generation, you know, out comes the belt.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get my backside, you know, whipped off. And so it's like, okay, I'm going to avoid that at all costs. But it was more than that. It was also the, you know, I'm bad. I made a mistake. I am a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn to throw up some really big, heavy walls in order to protect yourself from that kind of pain.
Absolutely. Well, and as you said that, you know, one part that we probably ought to address here too, is that, and I think it's a cyclical pattern. The more we become secretive in our behaviors, right, including in our addictions, the things that we, you know, consider to be the most taboo and the most scary of all things to share. At least for me, and I would say probably for most of my clients, we get so good at minimizing or embellishing, right? Telling half truths.
Yes.
That we start, it is just as much as it is a defense mechanism with the external, right? People not seeing that part of me. Looking back, I think it was really a mechanism against the internal.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There was that internal escape and running from the truth just as much as it was external, because I didn't want to face what these shame-based messages. I didn't want to feel like I was worthless. I didn't want to feel like I was useless. And it was much easier, not just with like an ecclesiastical leader or, you know, a priest or something, not just embellishing from that perspective. Right. But also even embellishing in my own mind. Right. Convincing myself that I remember all through like high school, just thinking I have a little porn problem.
Yeah.
And part of that was a naivete. Back then, sex addiction was a very new concept and not a lot of people even knew the term, but also a big part of it was minimization, right? The problem was much, much bigger than I was giving credence for, but I had gotten so good at just kind of isolating it from every other part of my life.
Yeah.
Right. That James Bond mentality that I think in many ways I kind of bought into it.
Yeah. And we start, I know as weird as it sounds, we start hiding from ourselves.
Totally. Like, well,
how do you hide from yourself? And I think, you know, we could talk about all the ways this manifests. There's so many of them.
Tons.
You know, but if we jump to what to do about it, you know, so how do I come out of this place of secrecy and hiding and inauthenticity? How do I start to become raw and real? How do I dare to do that? Because it's so scary. Like, imagine myself like standing just out in the middle of a crowd with my arms wide open and a big bright spotlight on me and saying, here I am.
I masturbated yesterday.
Yeah. Here's all of me.
Or 10 minutes ago.
And I'm not going to hide anything from any of you. It's just the most terrifying thing imaginable. And so as we start to look at that, you know, you and I've talked about, this is not an all or nothing proposition.
Yes.
There are wise ways to come at this. Mm-hmm. You know, Steve and I would never recommend that all of you, you know, go and go online and declare your entire story to the entire world all in one fell swoop. I mean, let's get authentic.
You know,
that is not a healthy thing. And so there are some steps to take with learning to be authentic. And what you and I talked about, Steve, was that some of the first steps in that are find people who are safe that you can start to be real with.
Yeah.
And you start there. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the way to come at this, because we would never recommend that you just suddenly gush all this out, you know, to people who haven't earned the right to receive that kind of authenticity from you.
Yep.
So there is a wisdom, and there is, you know, taking this one little baby step at a time. So we're going to suggest that you take some safe people in your life and you start to dare to start to be real with them, to start to be authentic in little steps.
Yeah. Well, and when we talk safety, and we will cover this more another time, but it's important to even understand, I think, what safety is, right? Safety does not mean people that will just give me a pass. And I think sometimes we look at it that way, right? Because accountability is a huge part of not just recovery, but healthy living and connection in general.
Yes.
And so when we say, like, if my spouse is a safe place, in order for her to be safe, that the requirement doesn't need to be, hey, hon, I looked at porn for 6 hours and she says, oh, sweet, you want to go fool around right now? That really turns me on. Like it's much more, we have to recognize that there are consequences, right, to the things that we do.
Yes.
When we say safety, it's not an absence of consequences. It's does this person have the capacity, the willingness, the ability, and the desire to see this part of me while incorporating it into the whole?
Yes.
Without making a snap judgment or judging me on this one isolated thing.
Yeah, we might say, does this person have my back? Even sure. though what I'm about to share might be painful, even though yeah. it obviously, if I'm going to be in healthy recovery and even healthy living, I know that there are consequences. There are natural outcomes to sharing this. That doesn't mean it isn't safe. It
yeah.
just means that's a part of the process. And frankly, if we start to judge whether someone's safe by whether or not how they're going to react, how they're not going to react, are there going to be any consequences? And if we feel that any of that's going to be unpleasant, and then we back away and we bail out of the process, now we're going into the very thing that we're trying to come out of. That's yeah. why we become non-authentic. It's why we hide and become secret, because a part of us is afraid of facing those natural outcomes.
Yeah.
That's a part of maturity. That's a part of saying, you know what? I'm going to stand toe to toe with this. Yeah, it's not going to be pleasant in some ways, but doggone it, I'm so tired of lying. I'm so tired of not being me.
Yes.
It's a load that I'm not willing to carry anymore. It's just too heavy.
Well, and that's the reason why this topic is so important. You know, we hit on it lightly on many occasions on this podcast, but addressing it directly from time to time is critical, because there is no other, at least you and I have never found it. I've never seen it in the research. I've never found it in my own experience. You cannot mix real recovery with secrecy.
No.
They are 100% incompatible with one another.
Yeah.
Real recovery is so much more, as we often talk about, than just not touching yourself or just not having affairs or just not looking at pornography or just not fill in the blank. It's about becoming, like you said, incorporating that wholeness. It's about learning to become one with self and being able to share and connect that wholeness with yourself, with your higher power, with other people.
Yeah.
It's all about the connection factor. And even though the secrecy piece in many ways probably doesn't necessarily get us into the addiction, it does do two critical things that we all need to be keep in our mind. One, it does set the stage for it. In our book, The Pornography Paradox, you wrote a chapter where you talked about what we call the grand setup.
Yes.
And that this is a huge part of the grand setup, right? Is this mentality that we've talked about today that you and I were raised with. But then also it becomes, even though it may not get us into the addiction itself, it becomes one of the major players, if not the major player, in keeping us stuck. How many people listening? How many times did you and I say to ourselves, I need help, but, and then here came the whole fear message.
Yeah. And the way to think of this, so for example, if I keep giving pieces of my real self away in order to be accepted, loved, well thought of, all the rationale that goes through my head, I need to keep giving pieces of my real self away in order to have all of these things I think I need from people. Every time I give that away, I create another hole inside. I like to say I'm this person is just full of holes because I keep giving myself away. I won't be authentic, so I have to be fake in some ways. And then you have to ask yourself, so how are you going to fill those holes?
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? I'm going to go act out of my addiction as a way to fill those holes or gaps that I'm creating by not being honest, by not being authentic, by it's duplicity. Duplicity yes. is destructive.
Yep. Absolutely. One of the biggest ingredients to destroying the cycle of escape and numbing out is addressing head on the thing that you constantly escape and numb out from.
Yep.
And the more you can incorporate that. Now, we wouldn't say, again, that there is such a thing as a moderation to this. We understand Mark and I have taken this to an extreme. We have published a book about our stuff. Hell, we get up here every week and tell you guys super vulnerable, yeah. embarrassing, shameful stuff from our past.
And we wouldn't recommend that for everybody out of the gate. No.
That doesn't need to happen for real recovery. But it does mean that you be progressing along that journey of yeah, as we've talked about, you will never be able to mix real freedom from addiction with secrecy, ever.
Yeah. So if we give people a couple things to do, I'm gonna give you a little technique I use personally. I call it calling my brain on its crap.
Nice.
And so, one of the things I struggled for decades was this habit of telling little tiny lies. I'm in a conversation with a family member, with a friend, with a business colleague, and I just tweak the truth a little bit.
Yeah,
because something in my head says I need to do that to look a little better so that I'm a little more acceptable, so that you think a little better of me, or to hide some little flaw I have, because if you start to see that flaw, you're going to think less of me. So I have to tweak stuff, embellish things, withhold one little detail because I think that might throw things over the edge.
Yeah.
So now the habit I developed is and so this is going to be the thing for our listeners. Many times you're going to use this tool after you've engaged in the old secrecy habits. You're going to notice after that you did it again.
Yeah.
Here's what I do. If I get off a phone call with a safe person, so let's say I recommend you try this with a friend, a family member, a close colleague, somebody that you trust where they're safe, they've got your back. If you notice that you've been in a conversation and afterwards you go, you know what? I kind of stretch the truth on that one point in that conversation. What I do, I pick up my phone. I call that person back right in that instant that I recognize and get it. And I tell them,
"Yeah,
hey, this is Mark again. You know, we just had a conversation. I got to tell you, I stretched the truth a little bit when I was telling you this part. Here's what really happened. I just needed to let you know that.
Yeah.
Hi. Now I joke and say, now when my brain is headed for that tendency, it says, wait a second. If I do this, Mark's going to pick up that freaking phone and he's going to call them back and he's going to tell them that he did that. Dang it.
Oh,
okay. Maybe we should just be straight up right now. Cause I know Mark's going to call us on our crap.
Yeah.
And we laugh because he's like, okay, that's just like crazy. But no, I have the ability in my real, authentic, genuine self to step back and start calling that brain of mine on its crap. It's like, no, we're not going to keep doing those old strategies to be lovable and acceptable and to be well thought of. I'm going to call you on it. And I'm going to be honest and open when I see it in myself.
No, absolutely. And there are a lot of ways we could suggest doing this, guys. We'll just keep it limited today. We could talk all day about that. But I think the big theme is whatever it takes, you need to have that honest assessment with yourself, right? In what ways am I still doing this? Because this is something, these are the type of character defects that are important to work on as a guy trying to get sober. These are important character defects to work on well past you achieve sobriety. And so whatever it means for you, whatever place you're in at with your authenticity, find a way through Mark's technique or through some means to take that authenticity to a deeper level with someone.
Just a little at a time.
Exactly.
Start with little things that don't have gigantic risk.
Yes.
Yeah. I noticed that I tweaked this story that I told about when we were on that camping trip a year ago. I didn't quite tell that accurate.
Yeah.
I'm going to come clean and give the accurate view of that. Absolutely. Just little stuff like that. You know, you gave a great example, Steve, as we close. You said, you know, if you do discover that you want to disclose something like that to somebody that you trust, write it down. Yeah. Write it down beforehand. And then when you go to them to get authentic and honest, read it to them. Hey,
yeah,
I was thinking about this. I just need to read this to you. Because otherwise your brain probably, if you just try to freeform it and say, I'm going to go to them and tell them. Well, I used to try that and my brain would start immediately tweaking stuff in midstream of the conversation. My brain would go, well, you can't tell them that part. So I'd change it. It's like, oh crap, we're right back where we were. So it's like, no, write it down beforehand and then read it. So there's none of this starting to embellish midstream.
Yeah.
So it's just so funny.
Oh, it is. It's crazy. Well, guys, it's been great being with you today. Thanks for tuning in. We hope that you guys have a safe and sober week. Be well, and we will talk to you next week.
See you then.